Hey folks, it's Jeremy, the host of Blammo. Thanks so much for listening. This is a preview of one of our exclusive shows on Patreon. These are member-supported shows, meaning they only happen because of our incredible members and community. So check out a preview of the episode, and if you like it, consider joining us on Patreon at patreon.com/Blammo, where we have tons of exclusive Blammo episodes, shows, our amazing Slack group, and we're adding new things for members all the time. If not, no worries, we still love you, and we literally have hundreds of episodes of Blammo all free for you to dive into. Thanks so much.
Welcome to another episode of the Dire Workwear Podcast. My name is Derek Guy, and my co-host is Peter Zotello. So there's been a lot of talk about the slow death of San Francisco's downtown district. The decline has been years in the making. Ralph Lauren left some years ago, Barney's departed when they declared bankruptcy, and Brooks Brothers closed their store in 2020 after they also declared bankruptcy. I think the biggest news hit last year when Nordstrom announced they're closing both of their downtown locations, including the space they occupied in the Westfield Mall. To give outsiders a sense of how big this was, you basically had to walk through Nordstrom's to get anywhere in the mall because they occupied something like five stories in the building. Then Macy's announced earlier this year that they, too, are leaving San Francisco. This has caused a lot of debate about the causes. Crime, COVID, remote work. Peter and I don't want to get too into the weeds of local politics, but we want to think through what would actually bring people back into a brick-and-mortar experience. Physical retailers everywhere are struggling in this digital age, so hopefully this discussion will have some relevancy beyond the Bay Area's borders. Let's dive in.
Hi, Derek. How are you?
Good. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing all right. I'm bummed about everything that's going on in San Francisco. Macy's is leaving. Nordstrom's is leaving. That whole shopping area is going to be decimated soon. That's the city center where everything has been forever. iMagnon was there years ago, and now it's just going to get boarded up and empty. I'm a little bummed.
Yeah. San Francisco downtown has been on a slow decline in the past few years, certainly at least since, I think, COVID. I think that was like a big turning point where a lot of stuff just didn't return because office workers are no longer going to that area.
Yeah.
But it was on a decline even before that. And it's a huge contentious issue. I know not every listener is based in San Francisco, but it's a huge contentious issue because it touches on people's discussions about remote work, talks about homelessness, crime. I'm sure everyone has seen a lot of news stories about shoplifters in the Bay Area in general, but really hitting downtown San Francisco. I went to a Nicholas Templeman trunk show once and came out at like, I think like 9 or 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And I was walking out. I think it was maybe 8 p.m., but it was somewhere in the evening. And I just saw a bunch of like kids running out of, I think it was like the Dior store or like one of those luxury stores.
Oh, the Louis Vuitton store? You were there for that?
I saw it. And I was carrying my laptop and I was like, maybe I should duck in somewhere just so that I don't get jacked. But it is true that there is shoplifting.
Brazen sometimes.
Pretty brazen. And it is true that there is a lot of homelessness down there. And it is true that remote work has meant that fewer people are downtown. So the area in general feels a little bit more empty without all those workers.
Not as much foot traffic or tourism.
Yeah, not much foot traffic or tourism. I think it's a culmination of factors. But one thing that doesn't get discussed, or at least doesn't get as much limelight and it doesn't spread through social media, I think, is that even without those issues, which are real issues, I'm not dismissing them, but without those issues, you still have declining business, struggling business downtown.
We're talking brick and mortar stores.
Brick and mortar stores.
Right.
Because people shop online more.
Yeah. I remember back in the late 90s when pets.com was the first death of the dot-com bubble. People were just not ready to buy online. And then now fast forward 20 years later, 25 years later, and everyone shops online. Very few walk into a department store anymore, or any brick and mortar store for that matter.
Yeah, I don't think that it doesn't hit the news as much, but I think for many of these stores, it can't be stated enough that there are serious problems with brick and mortar that even if you removed the homelessness, Even if the COVID pandemic didn't wipe out all the people in downtown, even if you didn't have crime, you still have the fact that many of these stores are selling products that you can get online with free shipping, free returns, sometimes for a lower price because your competitor is based somewhere that has a different cost structure. So they can afford to give you a 10% discount if you sign up for their email list.
They don't have as much overhead because they're not investing money into brick and mortar stores.
Yeah. And that's on top of the fact that, you know, like most of us, going to a store is just a little bit more effort than the store bringing their inventory to you.
Right.
And for that reason, I think there's not enough discussion on when we talk about revitalizing not only San Francisco downtown, but many of these areas across the country, how can shopping experiences be more enticing?
Were you thinking of anything?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. One of the things that came to mind is that the Armory recently had two things. One is that they did this collaboration with KEF, which is a British brand of speakers.
Okay.
And they also put up some like Japanese woodblock prints. Around there, they, I don't know if you saw, but they have this new, like, they took over like the top floor, I think, of the Petter building or something. Like Mark Cho built out this.
Oh, in Hong Kong.
Yeah. They built out this whole thing where there's multiple, cause the Armory used to just be one store, but now they take up this whole floor where there's like a lounge. There is space for other brands to, occupy. Mark designed it so that there's this like walkthrough area where he imagines, one day people host like pop-up events where they just have a table.
Nice.
And when I was watching it online, I obviously don't live in Hong Kong, but when I was watching online, I was thinking like, that is a really smart way to bring people into a store, because the fundamental problem, I think, is that stores like Nordstrom's, Macy's, many of the places in at the Westfield Mall in downtown San Francisco are struggling because a lot of the stuff that you find in their store can be found online.
Right.
And so why would I go to your store versus at the Armory? If you're selling KEF speakers, yeah, I could, you know, there's a bunch of people that sell that stuff online, but I at least have to go to the Armory to like listen to the speaker.
Yeah, you can't really I can't appreciate the sound of a speaker online.
Yeah, I can't, because it's just filtering through my laptop, right? So I have no idea if that speaker is any good. If I want to go check out some woodblock prints, I actually ended up buying two woodblock prints from them.
Did you?
Yeah, both of them. It happened because Mark Cho did an interview with some watch guy on Instagram. I've actually been enjoying this series that he's been doing with, I guess he's actually on YouTube. Somebody on YouTube that runs a watch YouTube channel interviewed Mark about his watch collection. But in that promo, there was a glimpse of a cat woodblock print in the background. And I was
so
like,
of course you had to buy that one.
I was like, I'll buy the cat woodblock print. But yeah, like that is one thing that would draw me into a store, is if there are things that you can't get online.
Or you can't appreciate unless you're there in person. Right. Through your screen is just not going to cut it.
Yes. It surprises me that, for example, more menswear stores don't sell, for example, vintage watches.
Mm.
Because a vintage watch, one, it's an expensive purchase. I'm very, very new to watches, so I'm in no way an expert on this. But to me, plonking that amount of money online and then taking the chance of like shipping and then possibly returns, like if you're returning an expensive item, that's scary. You know, if I return like a $50 polo shirt or something, I don't care if it gets lost in the mail. But if I buy an expensive watch, like I'm freaking out if I return it, because I don't know, you know?
Yeah, like, you're crossing your fingers and hoping for the best once you let that package go.
So it's surprising me that more menswear stores don't have vintage watch collections, even if...
That you can see in person.
That you can see in person.
Yeah.
And you try on.
Todd Snyder does.
Do they?
They do. They sell them on site and they have a few in their store. And every now and then I'll get an email from J Press.
Yes.
Saying, we have vintage watches,
right,
which you can see in person.
Right. J Press does it. Emily Andor is recently included some vintage watches in their collection. And I will say, when I see the prices of these things, to me, it's like an obvious... like I'm just being honest, like when I see the prices, I just think like any like really shrewd buyer is probably going to buy that watch elsewhere.
Yeah,
unless they don't care about markups. But if you have vintage watches at your store, I'll go to the store.
The nice thing is that if you do go that route, returns are almost pain-free, right?
Right.
Because if you just buy it from Joe down the street, I got a vintage watch for you, right, and it doesn't work, and he's poof, gone, right, where you go to find him, then you're out of luck. But if you buy it from Todd Snyder, J Press, then you can always go back and they're like, oh, it doesn't work, let me fix that for you, or return it, no questions asked.
Right. Yeah. That has been very surprising me that more menswear stores haven't done that. It's takes up very little of your real estate. You could probably stack, like, I don't know, a bunch of watches in like two trays, display them, people go in, try them. And while they're there, they also check out your clothes.
I do like how Double RL, if you ever go into any of their stores, and I wish there was one here in the city, there's one, at least two or three down in Southern California. The one off of, I think it's Melrose, they have a huge vintage jewelry section.
Yeah.
They have it online, but you really can't appreciate it.
Right.
You go there in person, you're like, oh, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah. I think more menswear stores should collaborate with vintage stores.
Yes.
Wooden Sleepers has been collaborating with, they did one with, again, J Press.
That's right.
They did another collaboration with Todd Snyder or something. Just, yeah, collaborate with these small vintage shops because, one, you are not competing on the same clothes. Because if Wooden Sleepers is selling one vintage field jacket, like the guy that's buying that vintage field jacket is a slightly different customer than like the guy buying a new one. So bring in those vintage pieces. Someone might come in and they might start to appreciate some other things that you have in the shop. It's not like Todd Snyder is bringing in like J. Crew, for example, right?
Yeah.
That's like a real direct competitor. I know this is very niche, but you know, for me anyway, fountain pens. I love fountain pens. I can't always buy them. I don't feel comfortable buying them online because I want to test them. I want to write
them. Yeah, since you're going to be using them in your hand, you want to feel how the balance is in your hand, how it tactile feels between your fingers and in the palm. That's a very distinct reason to go in person.
So when this news hit about Macy's leaving, there was all this news. City officials have been talking about how to revitalize downtown forever, but there's this discussion about whether you need to clean up homelessness or you need to beef up security or whether you need to like figure out a whole new shopping system. And one thing that I've thought about is that downtown San Francisco should bring in and focus more on these small businesses, because I sort of think that, you know, there's an apparel arts issue published in the early 20th century that talks about the ideal menswear store. And they lay it out in, I think it might have been like 8 or 10, maybe 12 stories. It's like a whole building.
That's huge.
And each floor took up like a department. And
when you say department, do you mean for floor one is shoes, floor two is socks?
Floor two would be like tailoring. Okay. Floor three is like sportswear or whatever.
Okay, gotcha.
And it sounds fantastical, but when you read the history of some of the like early 20th century menswear giants, like Abercrombie and Fitch, for example, I can't remember the number of stories, but they had like an 8 or 9 or 10 story building. And again, like first floor was like home accessories.
Right.
And then second floor was like personal accessories.
Sporting
and they had
goods.
Sportswear. And, they had a book section. They had a watch section. They had one floor not only dedicated to like golf clothes or something like that, but inside there was someone to teach you golf lessons.
Oh, wow. Okay.
On the floor that was dedicated to like fishing gear, they had a pool where someone would teach you how to use
rods
and all of these things. So it was
Very hands-on.
When Apparel Arts was writing about this kind of experience, like that was actually happening at the time.
Oh, wow.
And I think that a lot of shopping has shifted from these mega duplexes and these mega complexes to increasingly smaller boutiques. And I think of, for example, like, I'm just being honest, like I think my parents' generation valued that Neiman Marcus experience. But when I think of luxury shoppers today, I think of them going to very small specialized boutiques.
Right.
I think of them going to like Self Edge for jeans. I don't think of them buying jeans from
a department store.
I don't think they do that. I think shoppers increasingly enjoy that smaller, more intimate experience. I don't think that people like the Westfield Mall specifically, when you go through Nordstrom's, for example, it's like a maze.
It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. There's just so many. There's just so many departments. You feel overwhelmed with options. Versus if I feel like if I go to Self Edge, still a fairly sizable store. There's a lot of stuff in there, but I know it's much more curated, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's still a vast array of just one thing, though. It's not just jeans and shirts and socks and sunglasses and everything under the sun. It's just jeans and accessories, right. Shirts, some sportswear, but also the level of service that they provide. Since they have such a limited amount of SKUs, they know everything that's in there. Whereas if you go to a larger department store, just because there are so many SKUs, so many items, they can't possibly keep track of them. And they don't have the time to try on everything. They have their own job that they need to do. So the nice thing about the smaller stores is because they are small, it's a lot more doable to go through the whole store and just one visit.
Yeah, I think discussions of how to revitalize San Francisco downtown, and also just discussions of revitalizing brick and mortar in the United States, I think should take into account the ways in which people have changed their shopping habits. One, again, any store that opens up has to realize that their next door neighbor competitor is also the internet, because anyone at your store can pull up their phone.
Yeah. And instantly, sometimes right in front of your face.
It's right in front of your face. They will look up the same item.
And then out loud say, oh, I can buy it cheaper here.
Yeah. And there is something to be said about like getting consumers to feel like they're supporting the community and all that, which I think is good. We can have those kind of discussions, but fundamentally people always act in their self-interest, and you can only guilt trip people for so long,
right?
And tell them like, oh, like support your local community. It has to make financial sense. And so one, many of the brick and mortar stores that are opening up have to find ways so that they're not selling the same stuff that people can get online. Again, that can be, certain items that you can't experience except in person, like, you know, incorporating used watches or vintage watches or speakers or art inside your sales floor. Or also recognizing that I think many people have shifted their shopping habits away from these large, going from the kind of like Abercrombie and Fitch apparel arts, like idea of this luxury experience of like multi-story buildings, that shifted towards department stores. And I think that the move from there has also gone to smaller boutiques. People over the last 100 years have valued smaller and smaller, more intimate, more curated, more specialized shopping experiences, which means that I think when you're building out these spaces, if you're looking at Westfield Mall in downtown San Francisco, you can't like just find another retailer to take over the space that Macy's took.
That
Macy's building is huge.
Yeah.
So you have to carve it up to these very small boutiques where you have, you know, I don't know, like one guy who like makes like greeting cards by hand or something. And the fact that he makes it by hand and it's his stuff means that you can't buy it online. And you don't know if you're going to like the greeting card unless you go there and you handle.
Or he can make it right then and there.
Yeah. Like it could be a custom products or whatever. But that has to be a very small stall, because that guy can't sell enough greeting cards to pay for a space big enough like Macy's.
Right.
He's going to pay for like the shop size of like what you'd find like a florist, like your neighborhood florist.
Right.
And I think those spaces make a lot more sense, because that guy can at least move enough units to take up, to justify paying a florist size space, versus increasingly large stores that end up, you're carrying so many products that half of those things are things people can already find online.
Yeah. I wonder if there are a certain subset of people, I'm sure there are, maybe not as many as the larger group of people, which are those that just don't care and they're just looking for the cheapest and they're looking for something very easy and convenient and they'll shop online, they'll have it sent to their home. Let's be honest, that's 80% of the people out there. But let's say the remaining 20% don't mind driving to someplace physical, a brick and mortar store. But they also want to try things on. They also want to ask for advice. So you have the people that just don't care. And then you have the people that do care, but then they waste a lot of time going online. Well, what's the best jeans for my type of lifestyle? How do these fit? Is the inseam right? Is the rise right? Will it give me sick fades? what do I pair it with? And these are all things that are services that a store can do. but they usually don't. So I think if they focused more on the services, the additional services of styling, the additional services of knowing where the denim comes from, knowing how to pair it, knowing how they wear. That's why you see all these guys in Self Edge. We keep referencing Self Edge because they're amazing and they're a great example. But all those guys are there wearing jeans. They're wearing everything that they're selling. And they know how it ages. They know where it comes from. They know how it compares to last year's model. And they can give you all of this service information that will greatly increase the amount of accuracy of your purchase.
Yeah, I completely agree. You'd also have to pay people more.
Yeah.
Because many sales associates are living on really bad wages, like they're depending on commissions. So their incentive is completely dependent on them getting you out the door with as much stuff as possible, even right. if the stuff sucks.
Yeah.
May not work on you. You need to pay people a wage where they're not hungry for that extra commission, maybe not even working on commissions. And then also...
Want to hear the rest? Listen to the full episode and many more other exclusive episodes over on our Patreon. Visit patreon.com/Blammo to sign up and join the Blam fam. You also get access to our exclusive members-only Slack group where we chat about this and a ton of other things. So head over to patreon.com/Blammo and we'll see you there.